Local news, culture, and NPR.
Live from Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Jason Dole, in for Tim Bruno. And on today's show, it is Friday, so Dan Hoos from Sullivan County Government is here with the latest from the legislature, including an upcoming resolution opposed to Ulster County's landfill, news from the Center for Workforce Development, and a new part-time rabies control officer in Sullivan County. And veteran journalist Nina Burley has written extensively about President-elect Trump. She's planning to attend his inauguration on Monday. But before she goes, she has a few things to say about how Trump and the MAGAverse are responding to the wildfires in L.A. by undermining trust instead of responding to a time of crisis. Nina Burley joins us later, plus the quest for the best burger in the Catskills. It's all coming up on Radio Chatskill right after the latest news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Israel's Security Cabinet has voted today to approve the proposed ceasefire deal with Hamas. The move is an important step, though not yet a final one, towards stopping the fighting in Gaza. NPR's Greg Myrie reports the ceasefire could take effect as soon as Sunday.
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's Security Cabinet gave its blessing to the ceasefire deal. The proposal now goes to the full Israeli cabinet, where it's expected to win approval despite opposition from some hardline ministers. The deal could take effect as early as Sunday, though it may be delayed a day or so. The first phase of the agreement would bring a halt to the fighting. Hamas would release 33 hostages, and Israel would free around 1,000 Palestinian prisoners and detainees. Meanwhile, Israel is pressing ahead with airstrikes in Gaza. More than 100 Palestinians have been killed since the ceasefire agreement was announced Wednesday. Greg Myrie, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
President-elect Trump's nominee to lead the Department of Homeland Security is appearing this hour for her Senate confirmation hearing. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem is a strong supporter of Trump's border policies. Yesterday, Trump's choice for Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent had his hearing. NPR's Maria Aspen reports.
The Treasury Secretary is the president's top advisor on economic policy. And Bessent showed up ready to defend President-elect Trump's plan for the U.S. economy. Bessent was particularly enthusiastic about renewing the tax cuts that Trump first passed in 2017 and that are due to expire this year.
This is the single most important economic issue of the day. This is pass-fail.
Many economists have warned that these tax cuts, along with Trump's proposed tariffs, could restart inflation and make the federal deficit soar. But Bessent repeatedly downplayed these concerns. He said in response to one question about Trump's economic policies that, quote, nothing I can immediately think of would increase inflation. Maria Aspen, NPR News.
Fire crews are making progress against the two huge wildfires burning in the Los Angeles region. The Eaton Fire north of the city is 65% contained. The Palisades Fire west of L.A. is 27% contained. One of the lead agencies investigating the Palisades Fire is the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. ATF Director Steve Dettelbach says agents are trying to find out how it started.
They'll look at burn patterns. They'll look at whether there's one place where the fire started or several places where the fire started. They'll look at chemistry, and they'll just go out and do independent lead investigation. They'll look at camera footage. They'll talk to the people all around the area.
He spoke to CNN. The fires have killed at least 25 people. On Wall Street, the Dow is now up more than 340 points. This is NPR. President Biden has declared he now considers the Equal Rights Amendment to the Constitution, quote, the law of the land. Backers plan to rally today in front of the National Archives. The amendment would need to be formally published or certified to come into effect by the National Archivist. It's not clear if or when that'll happen. The 1970s-era amendment passed by Congress would guarantee men and women equal rights under the law, but it took until 2020 for enough state legislatures to ratify it, missing a deadline set by Congress. Brazil's highest court has denied former President Jair Bolsonaro's request to leave the country to attend Donald Trump's inauguration. Julia Canero reports from Rio de Janeiro.
Brazil's former president, Jair Bolsonaro, had requested permission from the Supreme Court to travel to Trump's inauguration next week. Bolsonaro's passport was seized last February because of investigations into whether he tried to stage a coup after losing re-election in 2022. Supreme Court Justice Alexandre de Moraes denied his request for this trip, arguing there was risk he would try to flee the country and evade justice. Bolsonaro is a fan of Trump and a strong right-wing ally in South America. This week, he told the New York Times he was, quote, feeling like a kid again with Trump's invite. Bolsonaro says his team will appeal the decision. For NPR News, I'm Julia Carneiro in Rio.
And this just in, the U.S. Supreme Court has upheld a federal law that will ban TikTok. That ban is effective this Sunday. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Kresge Foundation. Established 100 years ago, the Kresge Foundation works to expand equity and opportunity in cities across America. A century of impact, a future of opportunity. More at kresge.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Jason Dole, sitting in for Tim Bruno. And, well, even though Tim is not here today, Dan Hoost sure still is. He's a communication director for Sullivan County Government. Driven all the way from Sullivan County's own metropolis, the county seat of Monticello, with the latest from the legislature and the county government. Good morning, Dan, and happy Friday.
Morning, Jason. That is a better intro than Tim ever gave me.
He gave me part of it. We're collaborating here today. Tim gave me some words. I added some of my own too.
Well, that was awesome. Thanks.
I think Tim's writing for my style. Right. A little bit more flamboyant.
Yeah, you had panache. I call it panache. Panache.
Got to do something to get through the. Listen, I've done a lot of radio, but not usually before noon. So, you know, we'll get through it. But speaking of getting through it, you've got an update from the Sullivan County Legislature, and, you know, they meet every week, and there's always news. The big news for this week is there's a resolution that's opposed to Ulster County's proposed landfill. Is that resolution happen or is that coming up?
It's coming up. They talked about it at Public Works yesterday, which was the first set of legislative committee meetings for the year. They were going to have them the week before, but for the day of mourning with Jimmy Carter, they just got canceled that. So Public Works, though, had one of the more interesting conversations, although there were a number of them, and you can watch all of them on our website. We've got them all recorded. But there was one introduced by Terry Blosser Bernardo, our District 9 legislator, and also Joe Perello, who chairs the Public Works Committee and is a District 6 legislator, and then also Amanda Ward, District 8. Excuse me, Joe is District 7. Amanda Ward's District 8 and Nick Salamone is District 4, opposing the proposal put forth by the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency, which is basically the one that handles Ulster County's trash, regarding the establishment of a countywide landfill for Ulster County at either of two locations they've announced in the town of Awarsing, which, for those who don't know where that is, that's the town that includes Ellenville. And both of these landfill sites are basically, one of them actually is right up against the border of Sullivan County, and the other one is fairly close, actually, in the watershed area of the Rondout Reservoir, which shocked me when I saw that one. I actually think the one that is outside that watershed has a better chance of potentially happening. It's right up sort of what I call the elbow of Ulster County into Sullivan County, right near the Woodburn Correctional Facility. There's a point where Ulster County comes in.
That angle.
The angle, thank you. And it's
west,
it's
eastern edge of the county.
Yeah, it's off Route 52. It's called Dairyland, that area. And it's moving along, although there is opposition in the Ulster County legislature to it. In fact, the minority leader of the Ulster County legislature came to our meeting yesterday, as did the executive director of the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency. And they were at odds with each other. Of course, the executive director promoting it, and the minority leader saying, I'm a resident of this area and I don't believe that we should be adding any more landfills. Our position
waste management makes strange bedfellows.
Yeah, doesn't it? Our position is that we need to be involved in this. We weren't at all consulted or involved in this, even though they're looking to put, like I said, one right up against our borders. And it's not that necessarily legislators are against the concept of a landfill per se, although I think most of them are looking more at like waste to energy or zero waste, that kind of thing. But the idea that Ulster County has been moving forward on this, and we only found out about it by paying attention to the news in Ulster County. It's not like we got any kind of formal notice about it. And now all of a sudden, when we're going to do a resolution to oppose it, that's when the executive director of the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency shows up, which obviously didn't sit well with some legislators yesterday. However, they didn't yet pass the resolution because they heard from the minority leader of the legislature, the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency executive director. They talked a little bit more. I think they're going to amend some of the language, basically still opposing it, though. And I think that's going to pass at executive committee, which is this coming Thursday. So that was a very interesting thing. I would encourage anyone to watch it because you hear the back and forth. Not only from our legislators, but also from the Ulster County folks. It's an unusual situation that happened yesterday.
Now, is the concern primarily over the geographic closeness, like how close it is to Sullivan County, or would this be impacting us, and would the legislature be responding even if it was further proposed to be further into Ulster County, because we've got the bigger issue of waste management here in Sullivan County. We're trying to figure out how to deal with our own waste future.
We are. So, listen, if it was farther into Ulster County, I don't think I'm going to put on rose-colored glasses with that. I think that Sullivan County wouldn't be as involved as they're becoming now because it's Ulster County's business what they're going to do. We aren't getting involved in other counties' business farther upstate as well on any kind of philosophical or ideological grounds when it comes to waste management. It's the fact that both these sites are in very close proximity to Sullivan County's border. It's just the neighborly thing to do to include us with it and make sure that we have a say in it, because in essence, we are stakeholders. Listen, if they built it, if it got approved, which I don't know that the state is at all interested in that, but say that it did, we might be utilizing it because we've partnered with the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency before. We just finished a partnership with that where we sent all the food waste, the composting, to them. We're with a different vendor now. We're still accepting food waste. But the composting program, we've worked closely with them in the past. And that was, I think, also what upset some legislators was that, you know, we have worked closely.
We have this relationship, and yet this kind of came out of the blue. Yeah.
Well, it's or was it just not talked about because they knew that we would have lots of questions and complicate the process further? Because, of course, Ulster County's in the same position we are. There's a real waste issue there, and maybe they're looking at this as their lifeline to resolve it. But it can't be done at the expense of their neighboring county.
You know, apart from this issue of Ulster County's landfill, just for Sullivan County and our own waste future, like where is the county right now in terms of those plans and that process? I know that's something the county is looking at.
Legislators had started having some meetings with ReWorld Covanta, which was the waste to energy plant that I was with them on the visit down to Long Island. Legislators that went on the trip were very impressed that the DEC permits this in the middle of Long Island's most heavily populated area, that there's no smell, no smoke. Inside, it's hot and it can be a little dusty and dirty, but it is, yeah, for lack of a better term, it is an incinerator, but under very strict conditions. So they're interested in seeing if that could be a fit for Sullivan County. Obviously, there are other folks, including, I think, some legislators and some members of the public who are like, they don't like that idea. But right now, I think legislators just saying we need to investigate further because we have to have done our due diligence. Even if in the end, this is not where we're going to go. The idea that we're going to go to zero waste tomorrow is unrealistic. It's just not going to happen that way. In fact, things have to happen at like the federal and state level with packaging and other things to help reduce the amount of waste that all of us generate. There's only so much that the local folks can do. And listen, we should compost as much as you can, recycle as much as you can, but there's still waste being generated. And the county right now has taken on the responsibility of finding out what to do with that waste. And the only other alternative that has been identified for the short term, if the landfill upstate closes, is to ship it out of state landfills, which is going to be more expensive and doesn't really solve the problem overall of landfilling waste, which this legislature seems united in not wanting to do any further. So,
and incurs a further expenditure of energy in the shipping.
Yes, so, yeah. Absolutely.
So, other news from the legislature, Sullivan County has a new part-time rabies control officer.
Yeah, Joanne Giroux. Everyone knows Joanne from, I think, Catskill Animal Rescue. But she has been busy in our public health office helping us respond to rabies exposures, which there were more of than I realized. Now I understand why we brought her on board. Joanne joined us in November and through January 8th has responded to 25 potential exposures throughout 11 of our towns. 15 dogs, 7 cats, 3 bats. And it's just like that many exposures. Now, not necessarily didn't mean that rabies was confirmed in all of them. That's my understanding, but that she has responded to that just in less than 2 months. So that means there's an issue to be addressed there. Listen, rabies continues to be a concern. We've had rabid skunks, rabid raccoons, rabid bats. You don't want your pets to get rabies. So that's why we offer free rabies vaccine clinics. We just had one yesterday down in the town of Mamikating. So it's very much a concern.
Yeah.
It is out there in our wildlife, and we have to be ever vigilant for it. So Joanne's helping us do that.
It's out there in the wildlife, and there's a lot of wildlife out there. I've been introducing some people to our area, and one of the lines I give them about Sullivan County is, well, you know, we've got a lot more land than people here. You know, there's a lot of space. There's a lot of roads. Well, along those lines, along with that lot of land, there's a lot of animals out there, too. It's a lot
Which
of
means there's disease vectors going on, too. Yep.
So, and the county is looking for help with its Hope Not Handcuffs program?
Yeah, this was something that John Little, our Commissioner of Health and Human Services, mentioned yesterday at that committee meeting. We are looking for more folks who can sign up to be angels. These are volunteers with the Hope Not Handcuffs program. That's a collaborative effort between law enforcement, usually the local police agencies, and community organizations to find viable treatment options for individuals seeking help to reduce their dependence on prescription medication, alcohol, heroin, other drugs. And what these folks do is they sign up with their local police agency. So if you're in Liberty, Liberty PD, Monticello, Monticello PD, elsewhere, Sullivan County Sheriff's Office. And these volunteers are able to be called up right away when someone comes to the local police department, either of their own accord or involuntarily, or call the Hope line that they have. There's a Hope line. I'll give it in just a minute. These volunteers greet them with support, compassion, and respect, and then they guide them through a brief intake process to ensure proper treatment placement. These folks are not trained therapists or counselors. They are just there to make sure that our local folks who are struggling with substance use disorder, for example, feel cared for and that there's compassion and there's going to be support. Because I've heard this said before. I heard this just said the other day. If somebody reaches out and they don't have a positive experience while they're reaching out for help, they are much less likely to ever reach out for help again.
Yeah.
And so this is part of our way of addressing the problem completely, as comprehensively as we possibly can. So if anyone has any issues, though, that they need to call our Hope line for, that's 833-428-HOPE. That's 833-428-HOPE, and we can help there. However, for those who we're looking for to be angels in our Hope Not Handcuffs program, you just need to contact your local police agency. Those numbers are available online. Don't call the emergency number. Don't call 911. Call your local non-emergency line for your police department.
Okay. All right. And again, the Hope line is 833-428-HOPE. Now you have some news from the Department of Public Works. They're replacing some boilers. What's this in conjunction with?
Yeah, this is really interesting. They've already done this, actually. And normally I wouldn't talk about this because, oh, okay, boiler replacement. Sure, everybody's got to do that.
I figured there's another angle to this.
There is. So our DPW did replace the oil-fired boilers and chill water system at the DA's office. That's behind the county courthouse in Monticello. They replaced it with air source, cold climate air source, so ready for our kind of cold air, heat pumps. And so the building's now heated and cooled solely by electricity and qualifies the building to be recognized by the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority as a clean heating and cooling demonstration building. And once we add a meter to that to put it into our hydro or solar projects, it's going to qualify as Sullivan County's very first net zero energy building. That means all building energy comes from either on-site renewable sources or from a net metered renewable energy resource, which we do a hydropower one up Goodyear Lake near Oneonta and Cooperstown. And so it will be our DA's office, of all places, is going to be our first net zero energy cooling and heating demonstration building. It's really cool.
Is this the sort of thing that other counties or municipalities might come to check out to learn about how to implement this in their own localities?
We have long been a statewide leader through our Office of Sustainable Energy in green-oriented projects and initiatives. There has long been support from both the legislature and our county manager, Josh Potosik, to focus on ways that we can reduce our energy footprint, which not only benefits the environment, but benefits taxpayers too. It actually can end up being cheaper. I'm not saying everything is, but everything that we've been working on has saved the county money. And you can talk to our Office of Sustainable Energy if you're interested in finding out more, because we are willing to share that info, not just with other municipalities, but businesses and residents as well.
Cool. You got two items here that are, you know, in some ways about training, you know, and job training here. Maybe we can get to those quick and we'll take a quick break.
Okay.
First up is the county offering electrical trades training to folks for free?
Yeah, this is actually our fifth in a series of tradespeople classes that we've been offering through BOCES and now also through SUNY Sullivan. We pay for the tuition for it. The cost of that is completely free. The only thing we will ask people to do is possibly pony up the money. Might be $100 or so for fingerprinting and background check. But it's open up to up to 15 Sullivan County residents, adult residents, 18 plus. We are looking to increase the workforce in high demand areas. For example, we did construction trades. We did welding. We did automotive repair. We just finished a security guard training. Now we're going into electrical trades so that you can learn what you need to do to start your career as an electrician. You won't necessarily be a licensed electrician at the end of this. You have to do that on your own. But it's a 10-week course offered through our Center for Workforce Development, which who else would be doing this kind of course?
Right.
It's going to start at SUNY Sullivan in March, be every Tuesday and Thursday for a few hours each evening, goes through June, and it will get you ready to enter the workforce immediately after you're done with that. With, I'm sure there's folks out there, we'll help you find them, who are interested in employing you for the skills that you've learned in wiring and electricity.
And I remember the welding one when that one came up. So it's interesting to hear that that's been a continuing series. Now, the Center for Workforce Development is also looking to engage nonprofits with helping with on the job training.
Yeah, this was something I just discovered the other day, and I really thought this is worth sharing, because if I didn't know about this, plenty of other people don't know about it. We have a youth adult on-the-job training program that pays 50% of the salary for nonprofit organizations who are willing to train and test out an employee. So if you are a nonprofit or you know somebody who runs a nonprofit, and nonprofits, of course, are always struggling with paying their bills, especially personnel costs, salaries. You could sign up with our Center for Workforce Development to get somebody who the county will pay half the cost for. That's amazing when you think about that.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many nonprofits really know that we offer that. The way to find out more is to call our Center for Workforce Development at 845-794-3340. That's 794-3340. And explore that option, because if it's a nonprofit, no matter how big or small, I think we can help as long as you can meet us halfway.
All right, Dan, we got a couple more stories to get to. You mind if I take a quick break and we'll come back for that?
I'll be here.
All right, it's great. This is Radio Chatskill. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more with Dan Hoos from Sullivan County Government. So stay with us.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, Secretary of State Antony Blinken on a path to peace in the Middle East.
I've also had many opportunities to meet with Prime Minister Netanyahu. And when the conversation comes to normalization with Saudi Arabia, he knows that for Israel, too, that would be an absolute game changer.
Antony Blinken's exit interview, next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour. Listen Sunday at 6 for the New Yorker Radio Hour on Radio Catskill.
I'm Callison Stratton, a singer-songwriter, public historian, and host of Liberation Station here on WJFF Radio Catskill. Liberation Station is a show that highlights the work of female and femme-presenting performers across genre and time. It's my little way of balancing the scales of representation on the radio. Join me for Liberation Station every Saturday evening at 7 p.m., only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Jason Dole, and we're talking to Dan Hoost, Sullivan County Government Communications Director. Dan, now the Sullivan County Community Services Clinic is something that's open for appointments. What do you want to let folks know about it?
Yeah. We haven't always been open for walk-in appointments on these days. I'm not sure which day is new or if both days are new, but they just started announcing that our community services clinic is open for walk-in appointments on both Tuesdays and Thursdays from 9 in the morning to 1 in the afternoon. They offer individual marital and family counseling, crisis intervention, anger management classes, and more. Basically, any kind of mental health, emotional health, family health kind of issues that you might be dealing with, no need to call and set up an appointment. You can actually come to our Liberty facility. It's right off of Sunset Lake Road across the street from the care center in Liberty, and walk in any Tuesday and any Thursday between 9 a.m. and 1 p.m. It is a wonderful resource and something that will not cost you anything more than the time and money it takes to get to the facility.
And again, that's the Sullivan County Community Services Clinic, which I don't think that's something I'm very familiar with.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's open to everybody. We don't ask you to verify that you're a county resident or anything. We just want to help and give you a place to start if you're wrestling with some mental health, emotional health, family health issues. It's a wonderful resource. And this walk-in, we want people to be able to feel free when they're maybe dealing or struggling with the issue right at the moment. Hey, if that's a Tuesday or Thursday between 9 and 1, just come on over to Liberty and we'll help you.
Staying on some social service news, is there a person who's now a family services case manager? Is that new?
Right. Yes, that's new, actually. This is for our Department of Social Services, which is next door to our Department of Community Services. Again, at our Liberty building. This would be in our Travis building, as it's called. We successfully filled our state-funded family services case manager this week. Her name is Colleen Collins, and she will be focused specifically on helping families regain their independence and transition from emergency shelter to permanent housing. This is a big issue. It's only one part of a larger housing issue, but it's an important part to focus on, where we want to get families out of those hotels, for example, where they're staying, which are not great for anybody, and into permanent housing. We will work with them very diligently and very hard to find that permanent housing, because that sets them up for success in a way that the emergency shelter, as much as it could help at the moment, isn't going to help long term. So Colleen is going to focus on that specifically rather than the rest of our team, which has multiple things to focus on. So this is really exciting news, and I think is going to make a real difference in the lives of our most vulnerable families.
Right. And we've been, you know, various news that we've been following the last couple of years keeps coming back to the concept of trying to get people out of those hotels.
Yes.
Not using the hotels, you know, for this type of service for folks, but people still need some place to go. So this mm-hmm. is just another way that the county is trying to turn that ship around.
This is a daily job for us. We are working on this every day, and there'll be more I'll be coming back to talk about in future months about other ways we're going to work on this problem.
Talking about working on things every day, Monday's a holiday.
Yes, although I have a feeling some of our social services people will still be working. And yes. Listen, so will our 911, our care center folks, our sheriff's office, our jail folks. If it's bad weather, our public works folks will be out and about too. But officially, the county government offices will be closed on Monday, January 20th, in recognition of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day. I believe the NAACP is going to have an event that day that we encourage people to be a part of. But don't come to any county offices, because we will be closed. We will reopen as normal, though, on Tuesday.
And I will let folks know that we'll be open on Monday for MLK Day, and because it is also Inauguration Day, so we'll have special coverage of that. But then on the local edition that night, we will have a reaction to the inauguration, but we'll also have a reflection on Dr. King Day, checking in with the NAACP. So that will be the local edition Monday evening on MLK Day. Finally, Dan, before we go, it's been cold. You want to remind folks about what Sullivan County's got for folks if things bad things happen when it's this cold out?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I can't stress this enough that if you're dealing with a short-term heating issue or you've, I don't know, been kicked out of your house because you were a bad boy or something, but you know, whatever it was, if you need a place to stay for the night where it's warm and it's safe, we've got a spot for you. Between 8 p.m. and 8 a.m., our two warming centers are open every night. It is in Liberty at the United Methodist Church on North Main Street and in Monticello at the St. John Street Episcopal Church on St. John Street near the courthouse. These, you just walk in. Again, you do not have to say, I'm a Sullivan County resident, have any ID or whatever. All we want to do, the only questions we're going to ask is, how can we help? Do you need some food? Do you need a place to sleep? You need a blanket? If it's longer term situations, give a call to our Department of Social Services, 845-292-0100. That's 292-0100. We have ways to help you in long term issues where I just was talking about it. Emergency shelter, get you into permanent housing. Nobody should be going cold and hungry here in Sullivan County. We've got people just itching to jump in and help with you.
This is a good segue for me just to give people a quick update on the weather, but there is still a smattering of snow blowing through the area here and there, but not much. And it is warmer today than it has been. It's still going to be cold tonight.
Low
down to 21, partly cloudy, overcast for the overnight after that. And then cloudy tomorrow with snow developing during the afternoon, a high of 33. And again, just to follow on for that reminder about the warming shelters, I'll add to that to remind folks to keep the warming shelters in mind, because when the weather gets unpredictable, when the winds pick up, that's when we can experience power outages, which really put people at risk of being subjected to the cold. So just keep this in the back of your head that there are warming shelters, because something might happen this winter where you might lose powers.
And if transportation is an issue for you, if you were like, I don't live close to Monticello and I can't get there, or Liberty, call the sheriff's office or your local police department and they will get in touch with our housing coordinator and we can very likely get you to that shelter.
Dan Hoos, Sullivan County Communications Director, thank you for giving these updates to us, and it's good seeing you in person. I hope you have a good weekend.
It was a pleasure doing this with you, Jason. Take care.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, journalist Nina Burley, she's attending the inauguration Monday, but before she heads to D.C., she has some things to say about how the MAGAverse is responding to the L.A. wildfires by undermining trust. This is Radio Chatskill. Stay with us.
Last week on Wait, Wait, actor Josh Gad explained why he felt he could write a memoir at the age of just 43.
And as it started to expand, it just felt like, okay, this may be a story worth telling. And then a publisher paid me, and I was like, okay, it is.
I'm Peter Sagal. Join us for the stories worth making fun of this week with special guest comedian Rose Matafeo. That's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
In 2017, President Trump took office with an inaugural address that spoke of American carnage. In 2021, President Biden took office calling to lower the temperature and the raging fires of politics. In 2025, Trump takes office a second time. What does he say? We'll hear it. I'm Steve Inskeep. Join us for live special coverage of Inauguration Day from NPR News.
Live special coverage starts Monday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Jason Dole. Nina Burley is a veteran journalist and author. Her latest book is Zero Visibility Possible, and her Substack is called American Freak Show, a weekly newsletter keeping an eye on MAGA extremism and its absurdity. Her latest post is called Flaming Lies, MAGA-ing While L.A. Burns. And on Sunday, The Hound Books is presenting a conversation with Nina about her book at Seminary Hill in Calicoon, New York. Nina, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
So in your Substack article that we just mentioned there, you paint a pretty stark picture of the devastation in Los Angeles from these wildfires. How are you feeling about the political leaders who have largely remained silent or, on the other hand, use this disaster as an opportunity to score some political points? What do you think this says about where we're at in American politics today?
Well, it's foreshadowing of things to come, and it is also a reminder of what Trump 1.0 was, which was that you see the MAGA movement and the MAGA politicians using every crisis instantly, without fail, to score political points. And, you know, all politicians of all stripes are opportunists. And, you know, yes, a crisis is an opportunity, you know, to some people. But in this case, it was so obvious and so on display and in such a disgusting way that I felt that I had to write about it. I mean, in the first week of, you know, this terrible catastrophe, as far as I know, no MAGA-aligned politicians went out to California to offer comfort, assistance, to speak to the leaders of the, you know, the firemen and women who were out there, you know, tirelessly and anonymously trying to help people. And I think that, you know, in normal times, or what were normal times, I think you would have seen, you know, the government and the government in waiting, which is the MAGA movement and Trump, at least sending people out to like the shelters or to just be seen photographed standing next to the governor that they don't particularly like. And instead, they used this as an opportunity to spread lies about the progressive culture out there. I mean, yes, they certainly have some problems. I mean, the mayor of Los Angeles doesn't come off as being particularly efficient here. And you know, I assume that some of the things that they're saying about the regulatory system out there is, you know, does need to be rejiggered. It may be onerous, but overall, it is the wealthiest state in the country. It is, you know, humming along economically. And, you know, it's our country. These people, Californians, are part of America. Whether or not they voted for you, you should be supporting, at least showing some compassion. And the absolute absence of empathy that is evident in the Truth Social statements that the president-elect has been making are, I mean, I'm sorry to say this, but they are textbook sociopathy. You just don't see a drop of the milk of human kindness coming from this man.
And, you know, the other big news of at least this week, meaning that I'm hearing reports about it on All Things Considered and other outlets, you know, and The Daily yesterday, taking a look at, you know, to what extent, you know, wealthy tech fellows are, you know, supporting the incoming president and coming around to him. And that overlaps with this story, because in your piece, you're highlighting the fact that no major Silicon Valley figure has really stepped up to provide substantial aid to Californians that are affected by these fires. Why do you think that wealthy individuals like, you know, Tim Cook or Mark Zuckerberg, or Elon Musk, why do you think they haven't really made meaningful contributions during this crisis?
Well, again, mind-boggling. I mean, some of the companies have donated money. I believe Amazon has put $10 million in to relief efforts. I think some of the companies have stepped up. I don't know. I certainly don't hear that SpaceX or Tesla has, but the individuals who run these companies have found enough spare change to give Trump $1 million each for his inauguration. Inauguration funds are basically slush funds, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. They're just ways to curry favor. I don't know what they do with the money. I mean, you know, the first Trump inauguration, there were investigations into it. It was so outrageous. And this time they're not reporting where they're getting it from, or they're not reporting where it's going, you know, completely flagrantly ignoring the law. and standards in terms of what people do with that money. So they give these tech leaders have given him money because, as you know, they're bending the knee and they want access to him. But you don't see them putting the money again. Like, the, you know, all of these people are based in the state of California. They have benefited. Well, Bezos isn't. Bezos comes from Washington State and Seattle. But these guys are in Silicon Valley. That is the state of California. They have benefited from California. You know, a lot of the research that went into the bases for some of these, what these platforms exist on, the computer research, the original research, was financed by the public. You know, it's either universities or DARPA. You know, the U.S. government put money into the creation of the internet, and all of these platforms have benefited greatly from the U.S. government and from the state of California. And they are not out there. I mean, again, where is, you know, that Elon Musk can't peel off $1 million and give it and say, I'm giving this to this shelter in Santa Monica, is absolutely appalling.
One thing that I've noticed about at least the last decade in politics on the right, and I would say especially during the first Trump administration, what you would get from the sort of right wing infosphere is a lot of the people that the viewers and the listeners and the readers are told not to trust are those people who invest themselves in gathering information and relaying it in good faith, you know, the experts. And you mentioned this in your piece too, that, you know, the MAGA camp's obsession with undermining trust in experts, in this case using the fires as an example of how conspiracy theories flourish. How are we going to be able to respond to future disasters if the folks in charge are constantly saying you can't listen to the experts, you can't trust information, public health crises, natural disasters, all of this stuff?
Well, that's, you know, the million-dollar question. I mean, now we're going into a period where we're back into that mode of governance, which relies a lot on not governing, on, I mean, I guess at the very base, the very bottom of it, it goes back to, like, you know, the myth of the cowboy and the individualistic American who, you know, you're out on the prairie and you can take care of yourself and your family. You're a manly man, you know, you have your gun and you've got your axe and you build your own house and so on, and you don't need government assistance or intervention. And, you know, grandpa knew best or grandma knew best about how to cure the flu and so on. Right. We're back to that. And then what also is going on is, the Russian style sort of fire hose of falsehoods, of confusion, that of conspiracy theories that these autocratic movements apply or employ to keep the citizenry on its toes, away from trust in any government, in any expert, in anyone, in anybody but the leader. And so that's why you get people like after let's say the 2020 election, where at first everyone after January 6th, everyone, even the Republicans were, this is appalling. Of course, the government, you know, should be a peaceful transfer of power, and Biden won. But you slowly saw everyone get in line with this this lie, which was, and you see them today doing it, which is, you know, the 2020 election was stolen, and that is simply not true, and they know it, but they have to say it in order to be part of this club, and so that's what's going on. And how is this going to play out? Let's say we have a bird flu epidemic or, you know, some other natural catastrophe. You know, the problem again is where what you saw in North Carolina after the terrible floods there, after the hurricane floods, where all of a sudden out in these mountain towns, you have, you know, militia men running around going, we are going to kill the FEMA people. The FEMA people are coming to take your land. The FEMA people are only giving money to black people. You know, FEMA is your enemy. You know, the Federal Emergency Management Agency is your enemy. And again, it's all about separating people from trust in, you know, this sort of, you know, the government can do anything for you and kind of, disrupting the sense of community that people have and replacing it with the big brother. And, you know, he knows best. There's one sole form of, or source of information. And that is this person who's putting his, you know, statements out, crude, rude, and profane as they are on, quote, Truth Social. And I'm on the, recipient, list for a lot of their, you know, their statements because I'm a journalist. And so I'm on this list and I get his missives every day or, you know, 10 of them a day in my inbox. And they are constantly using the word truth over and over again, like, you know, in capital letters in the title, you know, truth. This is truth. This is truth. And that's also part of the game that they're playing, which is if you repeat it often enough, truth or lies become truth.
Yeah. And also, you know, the truth is very different than facts. You know, facts can be found. Truth can be formed. So that's
good
part
point.
Of what's going on there, too. But in what you were just saying there, you brought up that, you know, the old school mythos of rugged individualism. And, you know, I see that playing right into the other thing you were talking about there, the authoritarian style fog of falsehood. And all of that goes hand in hand with another recurring theme in your article, essentially that the MAGA response to crises is rooted in division rather than unity.
Yeah, it is. It is absolutely, or at least, there is no unity across the political divide. Maybe they help their own. I don't know. I mean, I think really it is this kind of, again, you know, the rugged individualist, the cowboy, the evangelical Christian, you know, notion of the family where the daddy knows best. And you know, that you're living in this world of danger and fear and, you know, sinister forces and the devil are lurking. And the only person that you can rely on is daddy, you know, and the family. And there's no, again, there's no kind of, community or sense of community that, that involves people who maybe don't think like you do about, you know, what the best way to tax people is. Or how people should raise their children. You know, you don't cross those lines. You're completely isolated in your kind of little cell of self-survival.
You're in a conversation about your book, Zero Visibility Possible, on Sunday at Seminary Hill in Calicoon. And then you're heading to Washington for the inauguration, and I would like to check in with you after the inauguration happens so we can just talk about the news of that day. Just real quick, what are your thoughts as you prepare to go down to D.C. for that?
Well, I'm getting a lot of warm clothes together because it's supposed to be absolutely freezing, which I think it will also be in Calicoon. And I think that, I expect it to be sparsely attended, but I do think that I'm going down there specifically because I do think that they have promised, the MAGAs and the Project 2025 people have promised that the minute his hand comes off the Bible, there will be a flurry of executive orders that will, be possibly to the level of shock and awe. And they've used that term. So, you know, I'm wondering if they're going to, you know, immediately try to release the January 6th, quote, patriots from the jail. Are they going to immediately start rounding up, you know, undocumented cooks at, you know, the diners around the country or, you know, the slaughterhouses? I mean, that's why I'm going, because I want to see that in, you know, up close and in person, because I think it's going to be dramatic.
Well, you'll be our in-person eyes on the ground at the inauguration.
Yes.
On Monday. We'll check in with you afterwards, get your reaction. Folks can hear it on the local edition Monday night at 6. Nina Burley, veteran journalist and author. Her Substack is called American Freak Show. And again, on Sunday, The Hound Books is presenting a conversation with Nina about her latest book, Zero Visibility Possible, at Seminary Hill in Calicoon, New York. Nina, thank you so much for being here with us.
You're welcome, and stay warm.
And this is Radio Chatskill. We're going to take a quick break, and we come back, we're going to find out about the best burger. Stay with us.
Support comes from Sullivan 180, building healthy communities through people, places, and policy one degree at a time. More information at sullivan180.org. From The River Reporter, the community newspaper covering four counties in Pennsylvania and New York along the Upper Delaware River. RiverReporter.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Hi there, I'm Angela Page. I do a show called Folk Plus, 2 o'clock on Sundays. And if you want to hear clever lyrics, memorable melodies, all wound around one theme, check out my show Folk Plus. You can listen to last week's show at the Folk Plus page on WJFF's website or catch it in real time, 2 o'clock on Sundays.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, could a new set of rules restore trust to academia?
These are not one-off cases. You have to fix it.
But is academia even capable of changing?
I think that my generation fought against the open science movement for far too long.
The hidden side of academic fraud. That's next time on Freakonomics Radio. Tuesday at 1 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Jason Dolb. Well, who has the best burger in the Catskills? That is what Michael Kaufman of the Catskills Crew newsletter is trying to find out. And he's joining us now to talk about this quest for the best burger in the Catskills. Michael, welcome to the local. Welcome to Radio Chatskill.
I'm pumped to be here. I haven't had breakfast yet, so I'm sure this conversation is going to get me way hungrier.
Me neither. So we're in trouble here. Let's start off talking about, can you tell me a little bit more about the Catskill Crew newsletter? How did that come about?
Yeah, you know, I started about a year ago. You know, my background is in building startups and building brands, and, you know, it's not the most rewarding work. A lot of things never see the light of day. It's just this statistical reality of it. And so I wanted to do something that was really community oriented, direct connection with the customer, the subscriber. And, you know, I've been up here since about 2017. I'm not a big social media fan, so it was really hard to find out what was happening at these local businesses. And, you know, the businesses were struggling to reach customers too, because the algorithms have just changed. And so I kind of saw an opportunity to create that conduit that connected the community, the businesses, the nonprofits, the stories, the history. And it's been an evolution. It's been incredible and a lot of fun.
I bet. So tell us a bit more about what inspired you to embark on a daring quest for the best burger in the Catskills.
Well, look, I'm not going to say burgers are my passion, but man, good burger, you can't beat it. And, you know, the whole idea of Catskill Crew is just to have fun. You know, it's to have fun, feature businesses, feature the people in the area. And I thought this was a really unique way to kick things off. And, you know, I think it's going to be a bracket tournament. It's really community generated. So I'm not adding any places on there unless they're nominated by our subscribers. And, you know, it's, I'm going to have a serious workout regimen, because right now I just took a look. There's almost 400 burgers that have been nominated. Some of those are redundant, thank God. But I think it's going to be a really fun experiment and possibly something that turns into something much broader. We're talking Caesar salads, fries, martinis, beers. You know, we could do this with anything if it works with burgers.
Now, anytime anybody does a best of, like a top 10, you know, ranking or, you know, crowning something the best, you got to know the rules, the parameters of how you're judging this. But before we even get into the burger, let's define the Catskills. Because, you know, people over here, people say the Catskills and they'll just be talking about Sullivan County. There's like three or four different sides of the Catskills. What's your geographic scope for this?
Yeah, you know, a hot topic for sure. You know, the way I do it is I'm covering as many counties as I possibly can and bleeding outside of just the Catskills itself, because, you know, Catskill Crew is for places that we could all drive to as well. So, you know, look, if something's in Pennsylvania, I'm not going to do it. If something's right over the Hudson River, totally fair game. I think all these things for myself is these geographic fences are quite malleable in my eyes. I'm not trying to adhere to, you know, the geographic boundaries set in stone by, you know, the forest preserve or anything like that. So, you know, I try to appease as many as I can, but at the end of the day, I'm just trying to have fun. And if there's a burger within driving distance, I'm going for it.
All right. You're casting a wide net and you're erring on the side of inclusion. That's a good way to do it. Now, what about the burger? What makes a burger stand out to you? What are the key elements that you're looking for in your quest for the best burger?
Yeah, so the way I'm thinking about it, we're going to break it down to four categories. So there'll be the smash burger, veggie burger, classic burger, and gourmet burger. I'm trying to be price agnostic here. It's all about the burger. Sides are not included in this pursuit. And we're going to do a 100-point rating system. So presentation, assembly, flavor, texture, and then kind of the miscellaneous, that kind of secret sauce. You know, whatever makes the overall experience really kind of unique.
How are you organizing this? Are you going to be the only one tasting, and where are you starting? What's the organizational side of this?
Yeah, so nominations close Sunday night, 5 p.m. After that, I'm going to sift through the 400 nominations, take out any duplicates, start organizing into brackets, seeing just how daunting this daring quest is going to be, how many burgers I'm going to have to consume. And at that point, we'll just kind of flip a coin and start figuring out, you know, which bracket are we going to start with, start working through those brackets. And, you know, each bracket is going to have a winner. And then, you know, there's going to be the grand prize, which will be probably an over-the-top trophy that I create and hand deliver. So lots of awards. You know, this is subjective, of course, like any quest to name the best will be. But I'm trying to, again, like, make sure that this is as inclusive as possible. There's a lot of good food out there. There's a lot of good people who are running these restaurants, and I want to make sure everyone gets a fair shot at this.
Now, of course, the real prize here is charbroiled glory. But besides that, is there like a best burger trophy or something? What do people get for getting the best?
Yeah, most certainly. I can't just give out a medal. I'm going to have to give, you know, probably like a 4-foot tall trophy that I'm going to have to get a U-Haul for, because that's the hilarity of it. You know, I want to do something a little bit over the top. Again, you know, I'm thinking a couple medals for the bracket winners, and then one oversized trophy for the biggest winner. And then, you know, I think I'll start putting together, you know, guides and resources for some of the quote unquote best categories in the Catskills, and, you know, try to drive some real business or extra business, customer discovery for these locations.
Now, before we go, just to change subjects for a moment, could you tell us about your board game? I heard you have a board game called Catskillopoly.
Yeah, again, I'll keep coming back to this. You know, it's all about having fun. It's all about the community. And so I was on a trip fly fishing out in New Mexico, and I was staying at an Airbnb, and they had a Tausopoly. And, you know, I just suggested to the community, hey, do you want a Catskillopoly board? And, you know, this is how we do everything. The crew members vote on the future of where this goes, and they all voted yes. And so I've endured a very difficult few months working with manufacturers and developing and designing this board, and it's finally arrived. And so we did 500 units, which is an extremely small run when you work with these big manufacturers. And it's out and it's about, and there'll be more iterations in the future, but it's all really focused on just the nature. There's no businesses on there. It's reservoirs and it's rivers and it's mountains and it's fire towers and it's towns, and, you know, really trying to have some fun with, you know, this region in a different way. And it's likely the beginning of a much larger kind of product pipeline of more board games and other things that we can create that the community votes for.
All right, Michael, before we go, how do people become part of your crew and actually weigh in on this quest?
Yeah, you can go to CatskillCrew.com. It's a free newsletter. You can unsubscribe anytime, and would love to have you there. And we put on a lot of events to bring the community together as well. So, yeah, hop on in there. I'd appreciate it. And reach out anytime to say hi.
All right, Catskill Crew. We've been talking to Michael Kaufman, the Catskill Crew newsletter. Michael, thank you so much for joining us today.
I want a burger. Thanks for having me.
Me too. Thank you. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of Radio Catskill, letting you know that on Monday, instead of Radio Catskill at 10, we will be airing WNYC's annual MLK Day special at the Apollo Theater. And this year on Dr. King Day, it's an exploration of his legacy and the ongoing project of forging an equitable society. That's happening Monday morning at 10, followed by special live coverage of the presidential inauguration. That's all happening on Monday. But for now, I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for listening. Tim Bruno will be back next week. This has been Radio Catskill, and it only comes to you here 5 days a week, 10 o'clock in the morning on Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR. Have a great week.